Lime, joined on the line by Benedict Jones, whose new book, Pennies for Charon, Charon, my Greek mythology is terrible. How do you pronounce that, Ben?
I tend to go with Charon.
Charon. All right. Well, anyway, Pennies for Charon is out now, and I've got Ben on the line. And Ben, how are you today?
I'm excellent, thank you.
This is good to hear. This is good to hear. Pennies for Charon has one of my favourite little characters back in action, Charlie Bars. Now, we spoke to you about Charlie Bars a couple of months ago when he was in Skewered and other London cruelties, but he's got a novel of his own. Can you tell us a bit about Charlie Bars and Pennies for Charon?
Yes, I mean, Charlie Bars is obviously the hero of Skewered, or anti-hero, as a lot of people seem to see him. He's a three-time ex-con who's somehow become a private investigator. And he seems to keep talking to me and won't let me leave him alone. And I've been dragged back to him now several times. And he's still whispering in my ear for another story at the minute, actually. So.
Ooh, I do like the sound of that. You know, when I read the books that you write and Charlie is talking, I hear your voice.
I think we spoke about this last time, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm sorry about that, but every time you talk to me and every time I read Charlie's parts, I think, he sounds just like Ben.
I think that's probably to the truth that within all sort of main characters, there is a bit of the writer in there.
Mm. How did you come to develop Pennies for Charon? Because I can see where he was going in Skewered, and people who haven't read that but want to pick this one up might sort of wonder, where is it all coming from? What's it all about?
I think he sort of describes that to me every time we go back to the page. I mean, I started Pennies for Charon with a sort of definite idea of where I wanted him to be, sort of mentally, and then it changed as I was writing it. Characters sort of came in and developed that idea more, and it actually sort of, the end was probably a bit darker than maybe I was going for at first.
Hmm. Was it a hard book to write? Because I seem to remember you telling me that Skewered just sort of came to you. Was this one as easy as that, or was there more work involved?
It was a different process than Skewered, but it did come quite easily. I do think Charlie Bars talks to me, and that enables me to write the stories rather than sort of forcing it. It did come very naturally and quite quickly as well.
Yeah. I mean, he's such a character. He's a three-time ex-con. He's now a private investigator. He, in my mind, sounds like you. What sort of things have influenced Charlie Bars' creation, apart from you?
I think there was a quartet of books by a guy called Ray Banks that were quite formative in sort of creating the character as well. And he came out of a time when I was actually unemployed, which sort of, I think, lent quite a dark tone to some of the early short stories that I wrote about him, in this sort of desperation for looking for work and sort of money within the capital.
Mm-hmm. There's also, it feels like a tiny touch of, I know you're going to be terribly, terribly disappointed about this, but there's a tiny touch of Vinnie Jones in him. Lock Stock. The Vinnie Jones character in Lock Stock reminds me, just in fleeting passing, I think it's your voice and Vinnie Jones's voice are remarkably similar. I mean, he's a lot older. He's a bit deeper than you, but you have that makings of Vinnie Jones' voice. Is it many, many more cigarettes and pints to go to get the real Vinnie Jones voices? No, this is not an ambition to be pushing towards, I don't think.
Hopefully not. No. You never. Although I do have a brother called Vinnie Jones.
Oh, God. Yes, of course. Benedict Jones would have a brother with a Jones surname. Oh, dear. But he does have that feeling of Vinnie Jones's character in Snatch about him, the idea of looking for something, and that West End sort of feel to it, although I may have completely the wrong spot.
No, I think there's always been that it's always a search for something, whether it's a truth or an actual person or an item, that the search is quite important to me in most of the stories, because I do think that detective fiction links back to so many other things, sort of the questing knight and the Arthurian legends and things like that, and that's the kind of thing of the modern age that Charlie Bars is, really. He is searching for something, and however you want to see it, that is a sort of truth that he's looking for and that he finds in any of the things that he's sort of hired to look for, whether that is a pile of money or sort of smoking femme fatale or anything else, really.
Yeah, there is that. I mean, he is... I'm going to get really technical on it. He is one of the true hero types of the Joseph Campbell definition of the hero's journey. And for those of my students who are listening in, turn it off now. But for the rest of you... He does do these things. He does do that Arthurian idea of questing and looking, and he does it so well. When you were growing up, did you read either a lot of Arthurian legends or a lot of detective fiction?
I think the Arthurian legends probably came first, along with actually another thing that influenced, obviously, Penny Fitzgerald, the Greek myths, where you might have the hero on a sort of a complete odyssey, literally sometimes, and that, I think, sort of grew to influence it more as it went on. Initially, it was sort of just the title. But then as it went on, it made sense that sort of Charlie actually... The Greek myths were more real to the story.
There is that, and I didn't put that all together because I'm an idiot. Of course, he's Charlie Constantine. He's Greek, part Greek. And Penny Sucharon is the Greek myth, and my brain must have shut down that day. God, how dumb am I feeling? I'm so glad the author of the book pointed that out to me, otherwise I'd be still standing here going, I can't get it. I feel really dumb now.
Oh, no.
That's all right, then. What's
well,
next?
I mean,
Sorry.
Don't want to overemphasize it sort of too much either. When
no.
I'm writing it. But yeah, there's sort of little bits in there, and a few people who have read it have actually quite liked that, so there may be a few elements of that in the next one.
That would be nice. I mean, I have just missed the blindingly bloody obvious, and I've read it twice. Oh, God, I tell you what, teaching literature just sucks your brain straight out of your ear, I think. I can tell all of this to my students, and then when I read your book, and it's called Penny Sucharon, and your main character is Greek, and I can see the Greek myths in it, and I still can't put it all together. Time to retire. But I love his settings. I love this beautiful West End darkness, the noir of London, because normally when we talk about noir fiction and noir detective fiction, we're talking about Los Angeles or New York, and most people don't put it together with London. They tend to go, oh, London, lovely, clean, pleasant city full of Boris Johnson and his bicycles. They don't sort of tend to think
of... Well, that's how they're trying to make it at the moment. We sort of touched on that last time, didn't we? The gentrification that is sort of creeping throughout the city, really.
Yes. I don't think you can ever quite gentrify it. I think that it's always going to have that element of rough and tumble, West End, gangstery sort of things. Your Vinnie Jones type characters.
I hope so.
God, I hope they don't take that away. The staple of British television will be lost.
Yeah, well, they're getting there a bit. I mean, they're sort of closing down music venues in Soho. Vanishing. Yeah.
Peter Cook will be spinning in his bloody grave.
Well, I think it's his son-in-law who's selling off a lot of it at the moment.
Oh, you've got to be kidding. Oh, God, come back, Peter.
He says that he hopes that it'll maintain its sort of soul, but...
Not if you're ripping the heart out of it, you're not.
Yeah, not when it's filled with sort of Russian oligarchs who aren't there most of the year. And
yes.
Don't give me another idea for a book in a minute.
And there's nothing wrong with that. Do you actually live around this sort of area, or did you just take the accent and go with it?
Well, I live in southeast London.
Southeast London.
Just over the river, really. But it's half an hour and you're in the West End. It's that, really.
Well, you can see it from there if it's just over the river.
What's that?
You can see it from there if it's just over the river.
Oh, yeah, I mean, yeah. Canary Wharf is, you can see it glowing away, huge tower that way, and then, yeah, it's not very far at all, really.
It strikes me as a very passionate piece of writing. It strikes me also that you've done a lot of research in this, and that research may take the form of just going down there and sitting in a bar and listening to people talk, or it might be something else. But was it a hard book to put these ideas together in? Was it? Did it just flow onto the page, or did you go and have to look at things in situ?
Initially, it sort of came, and then it was a case of fleshing it out as I went through it. So some of the time, you sort of think, because I do tend to use real locations. I think there's only one location in the whole book that's not actually a real place that I've sort of been to or seen.
I think that's what gives it the life, though, because you're writing from things you've seen. It's a lot harder to invent a world. It's a lot easier to look at something and put ideas into it. Is that what you find?
Yes, I do think so. Because, I mean, it gives you a sense of truth in your writing as well when you're actually describing somewhere that you've seen or that you've been, even if it's somewhere that you give a whole new lease of life, if it's a crappy flat that you turn into a brothel, or it's quite a pleasant pub that you've been in that you sort of change by, oh, well, if the lights were a bit darker and there was a few less customers, then this could be quite grim, and just changing it in that sort of sense.
Mm. And you mentioned that you've got an idea for Charlie to sort of keep going. I mean, I love the idea of Charlie to keep going. Have you? Can you share us a little bit of an idea of where you might be taking Charlie next? I mean, you know, abroad?
I had thought of that initially. But I think the next one will probably stay in London and have quite a lot to do with the Thames.
The Thames?
Yep.
There's quite a lot of Thames in London, I suppose.
There is indeed.
Strangely enough, it's built on a bloody river.
Yeah.
I'm not surprised.
I'm trying to touch on the myths of the Thames and a lot to do with loss. And also a bit to do with guilt, because obviously by the end of Pennies for Charon, he's done some rather bad things even for him.
Yes, I didn't want to give the end of the book away.
No.
I still don't want to touch on it. But yes, there must be a fair bit of guilt in Charlie, because, yes, maybe a nice sunshiny holiday. It probably wouldn't make for a very good book, though, if Charlie goes and has a good time.
Oh, yeah, people have said that to me before, though. Somewhere down the line, maybe I don't like him that much. I just don't seem to want him to be happy. But
some characters don't... I was about to say deserve, but some characters don't work if they're happy. If you took the darkness and the guilt and the really gritty nastiness out of Charlie, he'd just be... And this is going to sound terrible. You. Me. He'd be nothing. He'd be
no.
A pale... figment of himself. I think it is that darkness.
I've thought sometimes whether to have him cut back on the booze or the cigarettes slightly.
are you going on a diet yourself? I mean,
well, that, I think that can sometimes be a slight problem. I mean, the things that obviously that I may do sometimes sort of bleed into what Charlie's doing.
Yeah,
I think it's quite. You need to be quite. I need to be quite careful anyway to not. Letting the things that I do affect the character too much.
Well, I think you'd be a lot more frightened if it was going back the other way, though.
Yeah. Probably needs to have some more booze, yeah.
Yeah, I don't think we'd be having this conversation either. I think you'd be locked up somewhere. But, Ben, I mean, you've got Skewered out there now. You've got Pennies for Karen out there now. You've got Charlie Bars floating around. Have you got anything else you're working on, perhaps? Because I know you don't just write noir literature. You've written other short stories in other styles. Is there another book in you going, please, please, please let me out too?
Well, I started a sort of a crime horror hybrid novel with a bit more of a supernatural element to it. But that's sort of, I've left that alone. I've probably got about 15,000-20,000 words of that done. But having to think about exactly where that'll go. And apart from that, I'm working on a collaborative Western novella with my friend Anthony Watson. I've also put together a collection of Western shorts that we're sort of trying to find a market for at the moment. Apart from that, I'm also doing some research because I'm considering doing a historical crime novel set in your part of the world, actually. So.
Oh, over in China?
Yeah.
Ah.
Until the French concession.
Oh.
In the early 30s in Shanghai.
Ooh. Yes, I know just the gentleman to put you in touch with, too. There's a rather good filmmaker living in Shanghai that we spoke to recently who's into sort of crime. I really should hook you up. Arthur Jones. There's a lot of these bloody Joneses about.
There's a lot of us out there.
It's lovely to see Charlie back, and it's lovely to talk to you again about this. I'm looking forward to the Westerns, because a lot of people say, oh, Western, dead genre, you know? And I'm thinking, yeah, how can a Western be a dead genre? They keep endlessly remaking the movies, fair go. Is writing a Western while living in the southeast of London a challenge?
I think it is, but it's the research is something that I love doing. So I read quite a lot in the Western genre, not just in fiction, but also sort of actually factual books, and it's kind of losing myself again. It's the beauty of writing fiction and reading fiction is that you can transport yourself anywhere you want to, whether that's sort of a southeast London maybe a bit darker than the one you actually live in, or whether that's taking yourself off to Shanghai in the 1930s or Texas in the 1860s. It's that sort of transportation, but I do think it makes me want to get it right, to know enough about it to make it correct.
That's what I like, though. With your writing, you craft things beautifully. We can see the research, but we can also see the skull under the skin. I mean, it shows through that you take a hell of a lot of time to get it right. And authors who do that push all the right buttons for me. There are some authors who just bang out any old bit of tat, and because their name happens to be quite big, they can sell it. It's guys like you who should be keeping them honest, but unfortunately, they're not. I mean, I look at your work and think, I could be there. We could see this. This feels real. I look at their work and go, for a crime book, this feels remarkably like absolute stainless steel fiction. There's no grit. There's no grime. Nobody ever really heard. Yeah, production line. It's banged out, and it's probably banged out by half a dozen other authors who just happen to share the same title these days.
Yes, that's that.
God, they knock me. People say, have you read the letter such and such? No, because he wrote the first one how many years ago, and they've just changed the titles on them. Yes.
I think that's always been there slightly, hasn't it? There's always been those authors that probably have about six ghostwriters, as you said.
Oh, at least. They have the little production factories. At least with you, if I ring you up and talk to you, and I ask you a question, you can answer it. If I ring them up and talk to them, they go, which book? The one you wrote, remember?
Yeah.
No, you don't get that with this. You don't get that with Crime Wave Press, full stop. I think.
No, indeed.
Yeah. I think Crime Wave Press is one of the most impressive little publishing houses I've ever had the fortune to run across. You guys are so lucky. I mean, you get to write what you like. We get to read what you like, which is even more important.
Again, I think that goes back to that sort of the truth of writing, that if you are writing what you want to write about, it gives it its own sort of nuances. You should be able to sort of see that in the writing. No matter if you're selling 100 copies or if you're selling 1 million copies, I think as long as you're writing about what you really want to write about, it sort of shows through.
I'd rather read something passionately written than something dispassionate and clinical. And I think that's where Pennies for Charon craps at home.
Ah, thank you.
Look, Ben, it has been an absolute pleasure talking to you today. I am looking forward to catching up with you again in hopefully later this year. I was going to say not in a couple of weeks. I wasn't going to say a couple of weeks. That was no. You are not the author of the other book that I managed to interview 2 months apart. So you get them out a bit, Brian Stoddart gets them out a bit fast. Just put the phone down and I'm picking it up again. So yes, later this year, hopefully, you'll have something else out and we'll contact you and talk to you then. But Ben, an absolute pleasure to talk to you today, and thank you very much for joining us.
Oh, thank you, Stuart. It's always a pleasure to speak to you.